Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. But more than mind power, it is people power at its highest. And the reason that I'm saying that is the gentleman who is my guest today, Bill Schley, and his associate, Graham Weston, that helped to put together this material called The Unstoppables, they really are addressing something that has been the basis of the American soul for a long time. And what is that? It's entrepreneurship, the willingness to take risks, the willingness to dare to step outside the box, outside of the paradigm. Now, one of the things that intrigued me about this book is how the code and the disciplines of the Navy SEALs were used as a base to empower you, me, anyone that's interested in being able to stand in their own positioning as an individual, as well as in running a business, and knowing that you can be successful. You can march to your own drummer. That is what the entrepreneur represents to me. Bill Schley, I want to welcome you to the show. What is your definition of the entrepreneur?
Oh, hi. Well, thanks a lot for having me, Donna. Our definition for an entrepreneur is remarkably simple and almost mundane. I mean, one of the things we realized is that if we were going to write about entrepreneurs, we had to sort of have a definition of what that was, because, you know, people run around with all kinds of myths we discovered about what an entrepreneur is, and a lot of times they think, well, I can't be one because an entrepreneur has to be a genius like Steve Jobs or a visionary like, you know, Bill Gates, or you have to have a special education or an MBA, or you have to have money, you name it. You have to have or some kind of special expertise. And we find out that none of that's really true, that the people that are entrepreneurs actually are some of the, I say this lovingly, those are the most unremarkable people anywhere. They do one thing that other people don't do. They have a dream, and then they decide to dare to do it. They have a dream, and they literally take a step forward, and one step after that, and one step, and they keep swinging. And believe it or not, it's just about that simple. That's the difference. Everyone else talks, and so that was one of the epiphanies that we had.
I agree with that. I think a good example, and this is a simplistic one in a way, is Colonel Sanders of Kentucky Fried Chicken. And yep. I mean, you think, what can be more simple than just fried chicken, which is, by the way, one of my favorite foods.
Yeah, right.
And here was a man that had had a business, and a freeway comes in, destroys his business. He was quite happy with his little restaurant. He was just doing his stuff. Uh-huh. And he was 70 years old, I believe, when everything, to put it bluntly, went to hell in a handbasket. Mm-hmm. And then he starts saying, I've got something that's valuable here. Fried chicken. And to me, just what you've said, one step after another. Now, I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
How is it that you became, one, acquainted with the SEALs and the Israeli Special Forces? And why is it that in integrating and conversation with them, you felt that they had some tools that the everyday individual could use?
Well, there you go. We sort of decided to take an entrepreneurial approach to finding a solution, finding an answer that we wanted to know. I mean, we didn't start out to write a book. We started out to try to solve a problem, because we were both entrepreneurs and interested in entrepreneurship. And also, we kind of believe that the future is going to be won or lost by, you know, how well we do economically in this world. And we think the entrepreneurs are going to make the future. They're going to make the
Absolutely.
Jobs. They're going to make the industries. And those jobs that used to be there for people, if they did all the right things and did good in school and came out and graduated, there was a job waiting. Those jobs are going away, and they're not coming back. So we our assumption was, hey, we need millions of new entrepreneurs, millions of new entrepreneurs in America. Mm-hmm. How do we get them? So the first thing we did is we started looking around and go to all the usual suspects. So you read the books, and you talk to the professors and the business schools and all the, and we found out that in our gut, we didn't think they were giving us the answer that we were looking for. We didn't think, you know, we had enough chutzpah to say, wait a second, all these, you know, experts are disagreeing with one another. They're all canceling each other out. Mm-hmm. We need to find something else. And so what entrepreneurs do oftentimes is say, well, I want to go find out my own answer, not their answer, but my answer. And so we had a hunch. We had a hunch that at, right about that time, I read a book about the SEALs. And I realized, wait, these people accomplish more under conditions of more risk and more uncertainty. Their consequences are higher than anybody. I mean, it's life and death. They literally are the most amazing practitioners in the world. They know about this stuff probably more than professors at Harvard. And so it was a hunch. We said, maybe I can meet some. We can talk to them. And when we did, we talked to them about what got them going and what they thought the secrets of what. We got amazing answers. And we realized, wow, they're talking about what entrepreneurs have to do. They mm-hmm. have to step up to risk. They have to go forward in uncertainty. They can't quit. And the more we talked to them, we realized there were these parallels. We said, wow, the answer lies in this. And that's kind of how it started.
I like your term risk mitigators, not
right.
risk lovers. Risk
right.
mitigators. Now, this is something that I think people really misunderstand.
Yeah.
I think that when they hear the word risk, which is a good mm-hmm. word, there's nothing wrong with it,
yeah.
but they become paralyzed. They go, oh, well, I just don't want to do that. It's like someone I know that says, I just won't fly in a plane. I ask them why. Have they ever flown in
mm-hmm.
one? Nope, just won't
yeah.
do it. It's going to crash.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now
mm-hmm.
let's see. Statistically, this you could die from being in an automobile. Why are you afraid of the plane? Well,
right.
no. And I think many, many times people don't realize that they're taking risks every day of their life. They get up, they get out of bed. I mean, they could fall flat on their face, break their neck, break their leg.
Right.
I mean, I have a friend that did that at a event she was at. She fell
right.
down, she broke her hip. Okay, that can happen.
Right.
And people seem
yep.
to make that okay, but when it comes to business,
mm-hmm.
why do you think that people feel that there, one, should be no risk, and two, that it's got to be neat, tidy, clean, put in a little white envelope, sealed, and everything's going to be wonderful. It isn't.
Right. Right. The reason is because you're describing something very rational. I mean, you sit there and say, well, rationally, why should you be afraid to get in an airplane? Your chances are 1 in 10 billion. You know, if you really look at these things rational, a rational person would say, yeah, that's a reasonable thing. But we're talking, the reason is because we're talking about the fears that are not rational. What happens is that we are hardwired. The most primitive human emotion is to feel fear. And the reason we feel fear is to protect ourselves so we can survive in an environment hundreds of thousands of years ago where you had to know who, you know, because basically you got up every day and just going outside the cave, you might be eaten by some kind of an animal. So
mm-hmm.
you had to have this very, very highly tuned fear instinct that was automatic that created a fight-or-flight response so that the species could survive. And every animal that runs around has a fear response and a fear emotion. It's the original one. That thing fires off every single time. Well, and it's very simple and it's very primitive and basically it's pretty dumb. It just basically says, if it's new, be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not sure, if you've never seen it before, be afraid. If you don't recognize it, be afraid. Basically saying anything that you don't already know how to do is a risk. Be afraid of risk. It just emotionally fires off and gives us that fear impulse. And when you understand that and you realize that everybody that does anything in human progress had to go through a little bit of fear because they were doing something new, then you can start to deal with that fear because that fear is the barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And the SEALs were the ones that told us that the fear never goes away. But you have to understand where it comes from, and then you have to basically have a relationship with it. And then you go forward. And by the way, the more you go forward, the more that fear starts to go away. But if you never get started, you never go forward, and you never accomplish anything. So you think about how scary it is for someone to start a business, start something that's, you know, never been done before. They're on their own. They're discovering. They're learning. They're taking it, you know, they're rolling the dice a little bit to start a business. So there's all that fear involved. But entrepreneurs just are saying, hey, you know, I'm going to go anyway, and I'm going to take that fear along with me for the ride.
Absolutely. And that's
what they say.
That is really very true. Now let's talk about accelerated proficiency.
Okay.
You have four steps for accelerated proficiency. It's get it exposed, get a snapshot, get wet, get in motion.
Right.
This is something, if you use the analogy of the SEALs, that's part of what you go through. You're given the instructions. You have to do the work. And that is something that concerns me with so many people, the attitude of, I don't want to get my hands dirty. Now, that's rather primitive in statement, I know. But you cannot relate to something. You cannot understand something unless you're an active participant. And that's why apprenticeship is so important for anybody. I don't care what environment you want to be in.
Buddying up with somebody. We not only learned from the SEALs, but we also went to Israel, where there are a lot of entrepreneurs, and we met a lot of people in Israel that are also in their special forces. And so in the same kind of special forces that the SEALs are here, there are Israeli special forces that are like the SEALs. And they said, you know, if you want to learn something, you have to find the essence of what it is that you need to know, the essence, what it's really about. And once you learn that essence, then they'd say, you have to get them wet. And what they meant was, let's say you're teaching someone to swim. You can go to classes for 2 years. You can read every book on swimming. You can listen to lectures. You can watch movies about swimming. You can know more about swimming than anything in the world. But until you jump in the water one time, in that cold 50-degree water one time, until you're you're kind of keep your head up and water's going up your nose and you realize you can float, unless you do that one time, you will never, never understand or know how to swim. That one time. You have to get them wet. And so what we're saying about entrepreneurs, it's the same thing. You can learn about it, you can go to school, but unless you get in motion and start doing it and start experiencing it, you'll never emotionally start to understand what it is to go through it, to have obstacles, to overcome them, to feel fear, to get around that, and basically to become an expert in your field. And by going in motion, you'll find people think that entrepreneurs, like you say, have a perfect idea that's a fail-safe idea before they start. They almost never do. What they do is they get started, they learn as they go along, and they adapt constantly as they go along. But the market and the real world shows them, and they have failures and they fix them. Failures, they fix them. Through that failure, they learn. So failure is essential. And these are the things that we learned, that failure is essential to succeeding. You have to fail your way to success. Again, we learned a lot of this. This is what the SEALs would tell us.
Well, I really like a section in your book that's in the chapter on emotional mechanics. And in there is a question, how do you minimize risk? And you say, one, get proficient on the basics fast.
Yeah.
Practice until they're automatic. Find some tactical advantage. Yeah. Always, your winning ratio is 20% preparing, 80% doing. Mm-hmm. Two, eliminate your known disadvantages as they come up. Because this is something, nobody is going to have a smooth road on this. Three, multiply your power by building a true team. That is an absolute. As an entrepreneur myself, I know what it's like not to have that team and thinking, oh, gee, I should do it all myself, because that's what I was taught.
That's another one of the biggest risks. I mean, sorry, biggest myth about entrepreneurs, that they're these go-it-alone, lone wolf, hero warrior like in the movies, and the absolute opposite is true. No entrepreneur ever does it alone. Now, they may have a founding team or they may not, but even if they're a solo entrepreneur, there are people around you that you that become part of your network that help you begin and run and do your business. And no one ever does it alone. So you're constantly looking for who's going to be either my teammate, my colleague, my associate, even my friend in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the biggest multiplier of success that we found, really.
And then the fourth point is practice fearing your fear. I don't know of anyone in business. I don't know of a soul in business that doesn't have nights where they just feel like crying or angry. They just are so stressed. This is something, it's stretching your boundaries, and it's a very alone feeling. But if you have a good team, that can help you weather that.
Well, you literally can't do anything new. Anything new, like so anything you build, anything you progress, at any stage of your business, anytime you decide to make a new decision and build something new, you can't do it without feeling fear because you're going into an uncertain area. So at every stage of the business. So you may have fear that you have to overcome to even start the business. But now your business becomes successful. Now you've got to say, boy, you've got to decide, I can expand. And it's time for me to decide, should I build a new location, you know? And going through that process causes all kinds of fear and uncertainty. So you're always going through this process from the day you begin till the day you retire. But once you understand it, again, you get better at it, you learn, you practice, and you mitigate it in all kinds of different ways that we talk about in the book.
You have a marvelous story in here about overcoming obstacles, and I had not heard the yellow napkin story by Charlie Huthan, and this is with the Irving Paper Mills Company. Now, when I saw this, a paper mill company, we take paper for granted in our world, and this is something in a lot of cultures that was considered very sacred. Mm-hmm. Because they couldn't get it. Paper was very, very rare. Well, here in our modern world, we complain about having too much of it. We're concerned about the trees. But regardless, this is a man that took an obstacle and made it into something that actually established a brand. Tell us the story.
Well, I was one of the first persons I interviewed, a guy named Charlie Housen that ran this paper mill. And what they did is they took and they recycled paper. And they had a big operation. But he was talking about years ago when he got a chance to buy 4,000, I think, or it was a warehouse full of, believe it or not, old used yellow pages. And he got this great deal on this. You know, they're always looking for paper to recycle. So they had these 4,000 and thousands. The problem was that the paper was yellow, and you couldn't recycle it and get the yellow out of the paper. But they really needed, I guess, to do this business. So if he had basically shrank from the obstacle and from the challenge, he would have never done it. But instead, by that time, he was so used to having obstacles and solving them, having them solving them, just as an experienced entrepreneur, that when he ran into an obstacle, what do? Instead of panicking he said, you know what, it's just another obstacle. I know we'll find a way. And that comes from plain experience. That comes from being in motion for 10 years to have that attitude. What they realized was he knew a guy that was starting a fast food business. And it happened to be that Dave, I'm sorry, what was it, the Wendy's man.
Right.
It was Dave, the man that started Wendy's down in Columbus, Ohio. He happened to know him from some program they were in together, and he said, "Listen, I've got all this stuff that would make great napkins. The only problem is that they'd be yellow." But anyway, long story short, he convinced Dave Thomas that yellow napkins would be distinctive. They'd be great. People would remember the yellow napkins. And Dave, another entrepreneur, going to get a good deal on napkins. Said yes, and there you go. All of a sudden, that warehouse full of phone books became those yellow napkins at Wendy's, and they've been that way ever since. But it's only because here's a guy that said, "Look, I don't know what the answer is, but I'm not gonna. And I know that I get anxiety, but I know if I just stick with it, I'm gonna solve it." And that comes from practice. It doesn't come because he was a hero. It becomes because he had practice doing it over and over again.
And that is what I think many people fail to understand. Yeah. I've had people say to me, oh, you're so lucky because you do this, this, that, so, so. And I go, what do you mean lucky? And they say, oh, you're just lucky. It just comes to you. I said, you don't understand. Discipline yeah. is not something that just comes to you. It is something you develop. And it's only with practice. It's only by doing something again and again, just what you're talking about.
Right,
and you have
right.
to go through the lumps and bumps and adapting and everything else. There's no quick fix. The big
well, right.
picture in an hour, ideas, people, and execution. Now, this
yeah.
is something that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
People don't pay money for ideas. Illuminate us on this. This is a powerful chapter.
Well, the thing is, once again, you get down to these myths where people think, oh, I've got to have this one perfect idea that's fail-safe, and they think that everybody that started a business had this, you know, this one magical invention, and you know, you read about those from time to time. But that's again, that's not the way the world works. So what happens is that people come in with an idea, they talk to an investor, and they think that someone's going to steal their idea. And you have to realize that people aren't going to steal your idea because people don't pay for ideas. Again, they pay for ideas that are executed, that are turned into something real and tangible. That's where all the hard work is and all the effort and the time. So you don't have to worry. And also because ideas always change. Once you get into you start with a starting idea. But once you get in the marketplace, I guarantee that idea is going to change and change and change. Sometimes it's going to become something completely different. That always happens. The only thing that doesn't change are the people that are making it happen. That's you. And also, you know, what you do and through your own experience and your own talent that turns that idea into something real. So that's the execution part. So no one can ever steal that how you would execute, because only you would execute your way. Only you would do it your way. And again, people can't take that. So you don't have to worry about my idea going away, because the idea is always going to change. You just want an idea that can get you started. But execution is the thing.
There are a couple of things that I want to mention. Your book, The Unstoppables, is a powerhouse.
Uh-huh.
I think it would be good for every high school student to read this.
Yeah.
I think it would be good for anyone at a business school to read
right.
this. And the reason is...
Yeah.
We need to know here, especially in the United States, when we have mm-hmm. such ding-dongs for leaders that can't seem to think their way through a paper bag,
right.
and they've got all of these egos out here floating around, there is
mm-hmm.
so much power in the individual, the
mm-hmm.
average, whatever average is. I've never figured mm-hmm. that one out. But whatever the American soul really believes in, we need to bring that back to the forefront. We have been known as innovators. We need to encourage that. And we need to know that is a good example for the rest of the world. No
right.
pity pots, no free lunches, but let's mm-hmm. go for it. This is
something
you say in your book,
yeah.
fanatical support. Give whoever you have around you an inspiring mission to fulfill. You
mm-hmm.
need to start with an idea that quite simply inspires you, because it's the easiest kind, actually
right.
the only kind. And then, I really like this section, the best ideas make it easier or faster, not cheaper. Cheaper is the oldest motivator for consumers, but if you're not careful, it's the oldest, deadliest trap for your idea and your business. Leave cheapest to the low price, Lenny, and see how long he lasts. Aim for quality.
That's
Boy,
right.
that is a powerhouse right there.
Yeah. People pay you. They're happy to pay you. They want to pay the most expensive, and customers think they want it cheaper. They're attracted to that. We all are. But what they don't realize is usually when you cheapen and cheapen and cheapen a product, what you also take away is quality. You also take away value, and you're asking a customer to sacrifice something they don't want to sacrifice. What the customer wants is the best value that you can give them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most trusted. And not only that, and they want a unique value, and that's how you create a brand, and that's a whole other part of the book. You can't create a brand by lowest price, because the second someone comes with a lower price, you have no loyalty for your customers. So that's a whole other area. But I just want to say this. You know, in Well, we discovered something. We went through an entrepreneurial process when we did this book, because we start to write a book about entrepreneurship. I'm writing it with Graham Weston. Graham runs a public company on the New York Stock Exchange. And we're thinking we have to write a book that's a typical business book with cut and dry. Chapter one, here's a principle, here's a takeaway. Chapter two, here's a principle, takeaway. You know, very business-like. We start finding out that what really matters, people are telling us it's about emotions. They're telling us the stuff they don't even teach in business school. They're saying the SEALs are telling us it's about fear, and believe it or not, they're telling us it's about love. I kid you not. I'm hearing this from the U.S. Navy SEALs that are telling us the fear gets you going, but love is what makes you successful. And that means the love for your teammates, the love for your mission, the love for your country, the love for being part of something that's bigger than yourself, that kind of a love of belonging. And we're saying, and we keep saying, we can't write a book about that. They're saying, yeah, but that's the truth, guys. That's what we say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized I had plenty of those nights when I was lying there in the fetal position, Donna. You know, I mean, I know exactly
what you're talking about.
This book's going to be a disaster. This book is going to be an embarrassment. Graham was not going to be able to, people expect him to be a big CEO, and we're writing about emotions, the first 75 pages about love and fear and belief. We're going to get killed. And then you wake up and you realize, no, you know what? I got to go forward because I believe in it and it's the truth. Well, you know, the funny thing is that first 75 pages is the part that everybody wants to talk about. And it's not just like, you know, young kids, like you say, and people starting out in schools. We talk to people that are CEOs of major companies, very successful, that say, wow, I've never been able to talk about this. I've never read a book about this, but this is what it was like. This is what it's still like.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for helping me explain that, you know. So you realize that we took that risk, and we didn't know if we were going to fall flat in our face. But like all entrepreneurs, we kept going, and, you know, so far it's showing that it's helping people.
Well, that brings me to the point, and I know we're just about out of time. Other people's hearts and heads are the only place your success resides. Your product, reputation, and brand are not what you think, but they are what they think. You're only as good as they deem you to be. The main thing is to store in your head this paradox. And I think that is what moves people. When you have something, when you're speaking, when you're talking to someone, and you come from that position of knowledge, but also the positioning of heart. And I'm not talking about the gushy, gushy Hollywood love stuff. I mean, that really is not what we're talking about here.
No,
love has a lot of colors
to
it, but what it is, it's a combination of guts, passion, heart, willingness to adapt to change, understanding that fear can be an ally as well as an enemy, and not being of such a frame of mind that you're not willing to take that extra step, saying, it's not just for me. You get a bigger picture. I guess that's what I really want to say. And your book, The Unstoppable, is just outstandingly well done. I think you've got so much more in it. We don't have the opportunity to discuss it, but Bill Schley, what is the website people can go to find out more about this book and you and also Graham Weston?
Okay. The book, as you said, it's just called The Unstoppables with an S, like the Untouchables, but it's The Unstoppables. And you can find it at any bookstore or certainly at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all those web places. Our website is called unstoppables.com. So simple, unstoppables.com. You can read more about the book. We've got our little blog that we've been doing, and you can read about Graham and me. And the website is developing as we're going to start offering more and more subjects of interest to people about entrepreneurship, and as we keep learning as we go on this thing.
Well, this is wonderful. Bill Schley, thank you so very, very much. I really think that this book would be a great gift. I think it's something that whether you've got a high school student or someone else, you just say, okay, let's give you the book. We're going to talk about it chapter by chapter. It is a different way of thinking, but it's not a new way of thinking. if you ever talk to anybody who's an entrepreneur, you'll find that they'll mirror a lot of what's in this book. And that's the value. You're standing on the shoulders of the people that have gone before you. Bill Schley, The Unstoppable is a marvelous book. Thank you for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listener and you've never called into the show before, I would be delighted to light up your life and anyone else that's interested. Light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, and all I need from you is your first name or initial. That's right. Of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. And then relax. I'll tell you what I perceive, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me about anything that you like. I wanted to share a story with you, and I, being in the arena of mind and the study of mind and so many different applications of same for most of my life, I have found stories absolutely captivating. And when I came across this one, I thought I'd like to share it with you. It is about a man by the name of Perlmutter. This was an experience that he had in 1961, the date September the 29th. Now, the captain and crew of a World War II B-17 Flying Fortress bomber was en route to England. Now, Bert Perlmutter, he's a flight engineer and a top turret gunner, during the war 16 years earlier, and his teenage daughter were on that plane. Now, they were crammed into the back of this World War II B-17 Flying Fortress bomber. Of course, it was just packed with stuff. There were crates of spare parts. There were rounds of drilled bullets, machine guns. And this man and his daughter just settled in. These planes are noisy. But they had cots on the plane itself, and they went to sleep. Now, one of the men looked back from the flight deck. And this is what happened. There was dust floating through, he said, the sunlit air, and he called out, "I don't believe," and there was a long pause, "Hey, you guys, am I really seeing what I think I'm seeing?" Now, this is what happened on the plane. Everyone saw the very same thing. Perlmutter was having a nightmare. His lips, as they described it, were silently screaming and shouting, and sweat was dripping from his forehead, and his body was locked in some kind of a struggle. The dream he was having became visible, like a hologram, before their eyes. And this is what they saw. There were dim shadows that formed into the shapes of two men. Nobody knew who they were, but they were wearing leather helmets, goggles, and oxygen masks. They were firing machine guns at an unseen enemy. One man lurched and struggled towards these pilots that are watching this hologram. His hand had been blown off. The other shadow, the other fellow, dragged his friend to an open airspace above the navigator's upward firing gun position and shoved this blood-spurting arm into the wind. The sub-zero temperature on the outside of the plane closed the wound because it froze the flesh and the blood. Perlmutter, who is in this drama, in this dream, wakes up. When he wakes up, the ghost figures disappeared. One of the pilots, as Perlmutter is awakening, coming out of it, offers him a cigarette. The pilot sees something on the floor. This is what he found. A machine gun round. It was hot, just like it had come out of that machine gun that they had witnessed firing. It was not there when their plane took off. Now, this is what Perlmutter said to the other people during what he called the experience of living through what was a Black Thursday in 1943. He said a gunner on Perlmutter's plane had had his hand blown off, and Perlmutter had shoved his stump into the open air, saving the man's life. In the dream state, the holograph reality of what this man had experienced was shown to other people. That's a true story. Can you imagine what that experience was? Having that demonstration, the power of the mind being made visible to other people. An incredible story. But I wanted to share that with you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008 is the telephone number to call in to. Tomorrow, wow, have I got a great guest. Jan Reynolds. Now, this is a woman. Oh, what can I say? You're going to have to listen to this show. What she's gone through, I don't think I'd ever have an interest in. I would never want to climb mountains and have the experiences that she's gone through in a million years. That is not my choice. But I'll tell you what, it's gripping. This is a woman that has accomplished so much in mountain climbing and in traveling and enduring things that most men don't even want to do. She's an incredible female. So we're going to be having Jan on. Her book is called The High Altitude Woman. Wow, she's a testimony to so many things. But what I really appreciated was the wisdom in the book and showing how she grew as a woman in her understanding of herself, as well as the men whose world she entered into. Mountaineering is not something most women are interested in, and for good reason. And then on Friday, we're going to have an open mic day. That's right. There's not going to be any guests on Friday. You'll be able to call in at any time during the hour. And by the way, again, you can call me now, 888-627-6008. I wanted to share something with you because this is summertime. And I went into my bank not that long ago, and one of the tellers was talking with me, and she said, Donna, do you have any recommendation for mosquito bites? And I asked her what the challenge was. Well, she had gone out to some outdoor activity, and the mosquitoes were just hatching, and of course they're looking for lunch wherever they are, and that lunch is anything that has a healthy blood level to it. And it had been a warm day, and of course she had sweat quite a bit, so that is one of the things that triggers the chemical radar of mosquitoes. They go, it's alive and it's moving. Yahoo, here we go. And they'll come in and they'll chomp, and you end up with all these delightful little things called red bumps all over you. And she said she was nearly going crazy because it just itched furiously. So I told her about calamine lotion, but witch hazel is also something that you want to have. And there's just there's aloe vera items that you can buy that can be very soothing, but you are going to itch. Well, there was a person that was very concerned because there are insect repellents. And, of course, DEET, D-E-E-T, is something that, It is a chemical. It does work, by the way. It works very well, but it does have a smell to it, so you have to really be thoughtful. And there was a concern about using it on children. And there were some suggestions that I thought were really, really quite good. It said there's a plant-based insect repellent that contains the oil of lemon eucalyptus, and it does a good job about protecting you against mosquito bites. It's better, actually, than citronella, cedar, or soybean oils. And that's from the Center for Disease Control. Also, they say that lemon eucalyptus oil, and this is what you look for on a label, it's P-methane-3,8-diol on product labels. That's how it is identified. They don't put something simple like lemon eucalyptus oil. They use the chemical formula for it. And it performs as well as chemical repellents with low concentrations of DEET. Now, natural products sometimes can have side effects for people. And sometimes people are allergic to essential oils. It's rare, but it can happen. And you should not use oil of lemon eucalyptus on children under the age of 3. So this is a website that you can go to if you are interested in finding out about repellents that are especially effective in your area. And this is a long one, so I'm going to repeat it twice. It's C like Charles, F like Frank, pub, dot E-P like Paul, A, dot gov, /OPPRES/insect/index.cfm. And I'll repeat that again, cfpub.epa.gov/OPPRES/insect/index.ctf. So that's a good resource if you're wanting to find out about what you can use. I know I had a friend who was a professional biologist. He worked for the state of Alaska, and there was a chemical compound that he used, and he said it didn't smell pretty. I never found out the formula, but he said it kept insects at bay. And up in Alaska, you get the no-see-ums. Ugh, they're terrible. They get through screens and everything else, but they can just literally eat you up alive. They just come out in mass. I know, because I experienced that once. So that's a suggestion for you. We're taking the break. We're going to be back in just a minute. Give me a call if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008.
Health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. I don't know if you have been listening to the news, but there is all of this information about criminal levels in various environments, Detroit, Chicago, and all kinds of statistics have been bandied about. And I thought it was quite interesting when I came across a statement made in an article on August 15th, 1925. It was called The Great American Scandal. And this is exactly how it read. Just goes to show that some things don't change. Why? Well, that is another question somebody else is going to have to answer. And this is what the article said. A little after the first 3 months of 1925 had passed, Chicago had had 100 gun killings, more than one a day. 50%, all were committed by non-American groups. Russia, Poland, Italy, and Greece are conspicuous examples in which their contribution to the total population is much less than their contribution to crime. While the German, Scandinavian, and English record is excellent, a country like Lithuania will contribute less than 1% of the population and 2.3% of the felonies. My goodness, we've got different descriptions, but the crime level is still high. Isn't it amazing? What is it that breeds this? Fascinating topic. Maybe somebody is going to come up with an absolute answer, but there's a lot that goes into that. So anyway, there's that, and then also people with vision. People that see something bigger. Does this sound a little familiar? And this was done a long time before Sesame Street or anything like the Alphabet Fun app for the iPad. Thomas Edison is the man. He was predicting the future of education would be highly visual. Now, this is in 1912, 100 years ago, over 100 years ago. This is what he said. I intend to do away with books in the school by moving pictures. In order to teach children, you've got to interest them. You've got to get their minds awakened. We are going to teach them the alphabet by means of these moving pictures. We'll teach them words by showing them the object that a word represents, so they'll associate the word with the object. That's the way the human mind works anyhow, by association. Well, Mr. Edison, the books aren't going away. And I really think that your vision was right on the money, because we love the visual. We really do. This is the way that people have learned. Native Americans taught their children with visual experience, hands-on experience. There's a combination of things that we employ when we are learning. And I think that this was just fascinating. Both components, things written a long, long time ago, and by golly, seems like some things don't change very much. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat at 888-627-6008. And I just have a picture in front of me of a boat. It's a sailboat. The sail is down, but what gorgeous water it's in. Absolutely fabulous. And I love the poem that goes along with it. Live in the sunshine, swim in the sea, drink the wild air. Ah, yes. That is what summer is all about. Really enjoying the best of the best. And I do think that it's so important for us to realize that the invigorating energy of summer means for us to get outside. And do you know what happens? You're going to find yourself talking to all kinds of people. It's marvelous. And I think if you have a dog it opens up an opportunity for conversation with others. And when I go out for walks, which I typically do every day, invariably I find someone that I talk to. It opens up a chance for communication with a perfect stranger that you may or may not cross paths with again. But just by saying hello, have a wonderful day, that makes your day nice, and it also invigorates someone else's. I am astonished, however, at how many people are afraid to say hello to someone. I am astonished when I see how many don't want to associate with anyone. They've got their earplugs in, trotting along. You can wave at them. They don't want to even look at you. They're in this cocoon. And I thought, how sad. I wonder if they deal with other people in their life in the same way. We're human beings. And when you have beautiful weather like this, don't be afraid to smile at a stranger. I don't care what you've seen on television. Don't be afraid to be open. We are becoming, in so many respects, so isolated. We are associated with computers. The kids are tweeting, twittering, whatever you want to call it, and we're not communicating. And it's amazing how little things like that can make someone's day. I'm in my local post office. I love my local post office. It's not a big conglomerate. It's a small post office, but you stand in line, you talk with people, you have conversations, you get to know the people that are working there, how are you, what's happening with your kids, oh my goodness, this, that, or the other. That is what makes life rich. It's the sharing. It's the interaction. It's the camaraderie. It becomes almost like a team. You know, we were talking about that earlier in the show, how teamwork is important. Well, it's not just relating to business. It's relating to community. It's relating to the experience of life. You know, we're all on this ship of life experience, and all of us are going to have various ones, shades of good, bad, and indifferent, and we need to know we make a difference. And sometimes a moment of thoughtfulness, of compassion, of sharing, of empathy, can lift a person out of the doldrums. It's amazing. So when you go about your day-to-day, look at life. Look at this wonderful life that you are living. I don't care what you're going through. Look at this life. You have this opportunity to be a light for other people. And you know what's going to happen? They're going to want to share their light with you. And by golly, it's going to get so big. When you do that sharing, it ripples around the world much like the air when a butterfly's wings flap. It's a nice visual. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever give anybody else the right to mess with who you are. You have the right to be who you want to be, but remember, you can always learn wisdom from someone else. Applying it is what counts. Your life is a rich one. God bless. We'll be here tomorrow with one of the leading mountaineers in the world, Jan Reynolds. Won't you join me? She's an adventuress. I think you'll want to hear some of her stories. We'll talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.